From caps to tees and from bags to bumper stickers, we have you covered. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/shop.
RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Time for another Health Hacks here at Reality Check Radio. It's Monday morning. Now, last week, I should do this first. I should welcome Dr. Glenn Davies.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Paul. It's always such a pleasure to be with you.
I was jumping the gun because I'm quite excited, because I was looking forward to telling you what our listeners have suggested post our last edition last Monday, where we were trying to find a name to shame what we kind of, as a working title, called bad food disease, though that actually might end up being the one. And we both invited listeners to contribute their ideas to this, to 2057 inbox at realitycheck.radio. And a few have come through, and I want to run them by you. Okay.
Oh, exciting. Yeah, let's hear them.
Okay. Here's the first one from Phil. Alternative name for UPF food, unfood.
Unfood. I'm loving it.
Unfood. Yeah, I'm trying to think of that in a slogan on a campaign. Don't know.
Yeah, it's kind of like unholy, unwholesome, I like it.
We've always called unhealthy food gut rot. That's from Paul.
Yeah, so, love it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's sort of colloquial. You know, we might be after a slightly more sort of marketable name. Okay. Diet-induced illness. I quite like that one.
Yeah, that's really good, isn't it?
Diet-induced illness.
Yeah, love it. Diet-induced illness. I like that one.
Okay. That certainly cuts to it. Hand-to-mouth disease.
I love it.
Okay. Who did that come from? No name. All right. For type 2 diabetes, suggested name, carbohydrate intolerance disorder.
Yeah, that's good, isn't it? That's a lot more medical. Yeah. Like that.
CRAP.
What's
consumption
that?
Of really awful products.
I love that one. Yeah, love that one.
Sugar disease or sugar diseases.
Yeah, I really like that because it's so important to call it what it is, you know, isn't it? It's because we're eating too much sugar. It's pretty simple.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, this is interesting. From H, Chat GPT suggests a better phrase. I guess that's how Chat GPT has described it. A better phrase for bad food disease. How about this one from AI? Foodborne disease.
Yeah, love that, because that sort of makes you think about these waterborne diseases and yeah, okay.
Okay, junkitis from Ian.
Yeah, love it.
So you are suffering from a severe case of junkitis, sir.
That's good. I love it.
Okay, for bad food, smoldering fire disease, for cancer. Heart disease, Alzheimer's, bushfire disease. I don't know if that...
it's making the point that this stuff's really important. You know, this is not like subtitles. This is big, bold...
This is the main name.
Problem.
Yeah. The big slogan.
Yeah.
That you want people repeating, like it's... Oh, like this one. It's an epidemic of malnutrition.
Yeah, and isn't that... clever, because we think that people who are overweight are overnourished, but the reality is they're just having too much calories, but they're often undernourished in terms of nutrients.
Yeah. So those are the ones we've had in for now. There'll be more. I quite like diet-induced illness.
I like that. And I really like crap. Consumption of really awful products.
We need to nail it to food, though.
That one.
We need to nail it to food, though.
Ah.
So a crap product could be like, you know, a cheap vacuum cleaner or something, you know.
Maybe a
modification.
Loving all of those.
Okay. If you want to contribute, hey, we still want to hear from you. 2057 inbox at realitycheck.radio if you want to email. You've been busy?
Yeah, there is so much going on and so much opportunity to improve health. So, yeah, very busy.
Anything new you want to tell us about?
Well, I'm currently in a training at the moment where we've purchased a machine which is called HOCAT. It's a very, very cool looking machine. And what it does is it delivers ozone transdermally, and that increases the oxygenation of the body. And it has these other cool modalities that are associated with it. So I'm learning about its utilization. It's generally used in the health and beauty area, but I'm wondering about its application for the areas that I'm particularly interested in, metabolic health and cancer.
And we'll get on to what we're here to talk about in just a moment, but I'm just curious, what does ozone do? What's the benefit of ozone then? Because it's a gas, yeah. Obviously.
Yeah, and we're kind of familiar with it in terms of the ozone layer. Mm. I've just started the training, so I'm still learning, but it's to do with it's able to deliver oxygen transdermally through the skin to increase the oxygenation of the body, and oxygen's good for us. But the more complicated part of it is that it creates a small amount of free radical injury, and then the body goes about repairing that injury. And this is this whole concept of hormesis, which we've spoken about before, Paul, that, you know, having no stress on the body is bad for us. Think of exercise as an example. No exercise is bad for us. Just the right amount of exercise is good for us, and too much exercise is bad for us. Same with cold water, you know, in the cold water immersion, which I'm still trying to do, but it's getting harder, Paul. But so, you know, having a little bit of cold water immersion 3 minutes a day seems to be very, very good for us. Having no cold water immersion, just our nice, hot, comfortable showers is bad for us. But spending 3 hours in an ice bath clearly is not going to be good for us. So it's where do you get the right amount of stress without underdoing it or overdoing it? And that's where this free radical aspect of this comes in. A little bit of free radical damage stimulates the body to produce more of these antioxidant enzymes, which are good for us. But clearly, if you overdid it, if you lay out in the sun, midday sun for 12 hours, it's going to not be good for you. But a little bit of ultraviolet radiation is, you know, that's this balance point and the complexity of this whole topic.
Sounds to me like everything in moderation, you know, the old saying, everything in moderation. But it's just a matter of finding that point.
You're exactly right, Paul, but people have taken that too far, and they've gone, so the best will be no stress at all, but it's this dose response curve, you know. And so lying around on the couch all day is going to be very, very bad for us. Sitting is the new smoking, whereas running a marathon every day is going to be bad for us too. It's the balance point.
I interviewed someone once who ran a marathon every day for a whole month.
Really?
And got through it okay. Yeah, a woman, I think it was, when I was back at RNZ. Yeah, and every day for a month.
It's extraordinary. That's really good. I would suggest that most of us mere mortals would probably break down sometime during the first marathon.
I would. Max I've done is 21 Ks in any continuous distance anyway without stopping. All right. So
I've done 60, Paul. Paul, I've done 60. 60 Ks.
Oh,
I've done
an
ultra marathon. Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. Well, if I was running for my life, I could have done that.
Yeah.
But that's 60. Wow. That's cool. Well, Gary Moller's done like 100.
Yeah.
In Australia recently, seniors won. In fact, he won it.
Wow.
He's the fittest 70-year-old on the planet, apparently. How about that?
They're cool.
All here at RCR. Okay, let's get into this type 1 versus type 2 diabetes. I think it's probably a good thing to differentiate between the two, isn't there? Because I think a lot of people just think it's one thing.
Yeah, That's the reason for doing this talk, Paul, is let's start with the fact that do people need to listen to this? Do people who say, well, I don't have diabetes, I don't need to listen. I don't have type 1 or type 2. The reality is that you do. 89% of adult Americans have insulin resistance. So that is pre-diabetes. A good saying, you know, when people say, how do I know if I've got insulin resistance? If you walk into a wall and your tummy hits first, you've probably got insulin resistance.
Right.
So probably your toes or your nose, or maybe your breasts are supposed to hit first. But if your tummy hits first, you're carrying that abdominal obesity, which is one of the main signs of insulin resistance. So probably looking at that statistically, that's over half of New Zealand adults need to be listening to this.
So you don't think we're quite there at the US level yet, no, but we must be on the way. We must be traveling through.
No, we're not. And the reason we're not is the US add high fructose corn syrup to everything, even stuff that's not supposed to be sweet. We haven't quite got that far yet. So we're not as bad as the US, but I think we rank number 3 or 4 in the world, don't we?
Yeah, we're getting up there. They put that in food that doesn't need to be sweet.
In bread. You'll find, I was just listening to a talk this morning on a McDonald's bun, and they add high fructose corn syrup to that. You know, you think of bread as something that's supposed to be savory. Why is it being added to bread?
To make it addictive.
And to sell high fructose corn syrup, which is a waste product.
Oh, gee, here we go again.
So we're into this topic that we discussed last week or the week before, which was the ultra-processed food. Ultra-processed food.
UPF, and we're not talking about a delivery company.
Yeah, UPF, ultra-processed food. And, you know, that's the problem. About 60% of an adult's diet in the US is ultra-processed food, but scaringly, 80% of a teenager's diet in the Western world, so I assume that includes New Zealand, is ultra-processed food, which is causing obesity and diabetes.
And mental health problems, I would personally suggest.
You're exactly correct. And cancer. And virtually all of these modern conditions that we're dealing with, I think you can trace back to eating ultra-processed food, which contains sugar and these ugly seed oils like canola oil and margarine, etc.
Yeah. So type 1, you're born with that, right?
You find that generally not. No, generally it will develop in childhood. So it used to be referred to as childhood onset. It's more likely to occur early in life. It's an autoimmune condition where your immune system attacks the cells in the pancreas that make insulin. And as a consequence, there is not enough insulin. So type 1 diabetes is not enough insulin, in contrast to type 2 diabetes, which is too much insulin. But my criticism is that if we just focus on glucose, blood glucose, type 1 and type 2 diabetes look exactly the same.
Oh, okay.
They both have high blood glucose. But the reason is absolutely and completely different, and the treatment is 100% different.
Yeah.
Now, the treatment for type 1 diabetes is to inject insulin because the pancreas is not making it. But the treatment for type 2 diabetes is not to inject insulin because there is already too much insulin.
Yeah.
So to inject more insulin into a system which already has too much insulin is bordering on a brain fart. It's not thinking about it very clearly.
Does that happen?
It does happen.
A lot?
And there are rare occasions when a type 2 diabetic, they've just put so much stress on their pancreas for so many years that it gives up. So please don't think that there is never an indication for a type 2 diabetic to have insulin. But the very, very vast majority of type 2 diabetics, it's a brain fart to prescribe them insulin because they are hyperinsulinemic, have too much insulin. And the problem is that the body stops responding to the insulin, which is insulin resistance, which is 89% of the US adult population.
Yeah. Okay, so type 1, for some unknown reason, the body perceives its insulin as kind of a foreign invader, does it?
Kind of. It's the beta cells in the pancreas which make the insulin. The immune system attacks them, thinking that they are not self.
Right.
Why that happens is a whole complex question, but for some reason the body attacks them, they no longer make insulin, and the body requires insulin to be injected. And for this problem, this was an amazing game changer. I can't remember the date. I think maybe something like 70 to 100 years ago was when insulin was injected. And it meant these people, particularly these children who were dying, a horrible death wasting away, as children and teenagers, they lived. So yeah. Amazing discovery, but it is used inappropriately to treat type 2 diabetics.
I've got a nicely handwritten sort of flow diagram, I guess is the way I would describe it, from you in front of me. Do you want to go through some of that? Because I'm sure it will inform the listeners where you want to pick it up from. I don't know, up to you, but...
Yeah. Okay. So I'm waiting for the day that you create RCR television, because this would be much easier to do as a television program than a radio show. But let's have a go. So picture a person and they're wearing on their head a sign that says mouth. And I've just handed them a bag of sugar. So we've put sugar into the mouth. Then that person is going to give that to the next person who's got a sign on the head called blood. So mouth is giving the bag of sugar to blood, and now the sugar is in the blood, which is exactly what happens when you eat a Tim Tam. You are delivering sugar into your blood.
Yep.
Okay, and the next thing that happens is this is what happens normally, and then blood takes that bag of sugar and gives it to insulin. This is the big point. So now insulin has the bag of sugar, and insulin is going, well, what am I going to do with this sugar? And it kind of has some choices. So what it can first of all try and do is give it to glycogen. Glycogen is the muscle's ability to store glucose in the form of glycogen. And you can store quite a lot of glucose as glycogen, about a day's worth of food, probably around 2,500 calories you can store as glycogen. Now, this is a wonderful strategy as long as you run a marathon every day or you do an Ironman every day and you empty your glycogen stores. The problem is we don't go out in the middle of the day and hunt for that gazelle, which involves running a half marathon anymore. We sit at our desks or we maybe lie on the couch, but we are not emptying our glycogen stores to any significant amount. So insulin's tried to give this bag of sugar to glycogen, but glycogen's gone, nah, I'm full. So it goes, okay, I'm going to give it to the mitochondria and we're going to burn it as energy. But what happens if the mitochondria now go, nah, I'm full? So in a balanced situation where everything's in homeostasis, you're putting the right amount of fuel in the mouth, it will transfer into glycogen and mitochondria and produce ATP, and everything is in balance and everyone's happy and we're not gaining weight, we're not losing weight. We are controlling the amount that we eat by these hormones which are related to insulin, and everything's in wonderful balance. That is not the case for the vast majority of people living in the Western world. However, it is the case for most traditional people who are eating whole foods. Because when you eat whole foods that contain fiber, the right balance of fats, proteins, and carbohydrates, leptin and ghrelin, which are the fullness hormones and the hungry hormones, are in balance, and we know when to stop eating. You know, so everything's in balance. That's normal. Normal no longer exists for the majority of people in the normal in the Western world.
Yeah. Gee.
Okay. So have we managed on radio to
create that
image?
Yep.
Okay.
So it's ended up in the mitochondria, but the mitochondria, for however many percentage of the population, is saying, sorry, full, can't take it.
Yeah. So what we've done so far is what's normal balance. I'm just going to start moving into these abnormal patterns. But before I do, let's just do type 1 diabetes. So we got our man with the bag of sugar whose mouth, he hands it to blood sugar. Blood sugar tries to go and hand it to insulin, but whoops, there's no insulin because insulin's no longer being produced in the type 1 diabetic. So you can see what happens. It ends up in the blood. Yet mouth comes along with another bag of sugar, and that goes into the blood, and you can see very soon the blood sugar goes up, and it's not being transferred by insulin to the mitochondria or to the cells. So you've got a whole lot of hungry, starving cells not getting any fuel, and you can see how very, very quickly you would die if that was the case. You know, so that is type 1 diabetes. So we inject insulin so that blood now can give that bag of sugar to insulin. Insulin can give it to the cells and the mitochondria, and we live. So that's type 1.
Yeah.
Now, next one, let's go on to ultra-processed food. So this is starting in our 10 to 20-year-old age group. They are now eating these ultra-processed foods and transporting a whole lot of glucose, particularly to mouth. So mouth takes his McDonald's hamburger and now has this bag of sugar, which gives to blood. Blood now gives that to insulin, and insulin tries to give it to glycogen. Glycogen goes, nah. Tries to give it to mitochondria. Mitochondria go, nah, I'm full. So what happens is that insulin gives it to liver. Okay, insulin transfers this bag of sugar to liver, and liver goes through this process. Now, it's a biochemical word, but everyone can get this. It's called de novo lipogenesis. De novo means new. I think that would be Latin origin, I think. So novo, new. Lipo means lipid or fat, and genesis to make. De novo lipogenesis, the making of new fat. It turns the glucose into fat. The liver's job is to turn it into fat. So we've now lost our bag of sugar and we've got a block of lard.
Yeah.
Okay. And we transfer that block of lard to fat cell. So we've got another guy with a sign on his head going fat cell, and he accepts that block of lard and stores it. This is the caveman's refrigerator. The cavemen didn't have refrigerators.
Yeah.
How they managed to store food was through this process of de novo lipogenesis. They stored it as fat. However, we don't like this because this is getting fatter, and the vast majority of us don't want to store fat or get fatter. So we don't like this process, you know. And the problem with storing fat is you store it in the places you don't want to store it. So, you know, you and I might say, well, let's have a little bit over the biceps, a little bit over the pecs, maybe a little bit in the cheeks, but nah, that's not what happens. It goes straight to the tummy, doesn't it? Or to the hips, you know, so we can't tell the body where to store fat. So this is what's happening in our 10 to 20 year olds. They're starting to store fat, and that's fine for a little while because we have enormous capacity to store fat. It's the dad bod, it's the middle age spread, it's that process beginning. So what happens next? Okay, so let's go back to the start. Mouth now has three bags of sugar because we get hungrier because of this process. So three bags of sugar transferred into the blood. And now we got three bags of sugar, so we now need three men with insulin on their head to take those three bags of sugar. So we now, rather than having one insulin molecule, we've got three. We have hyperinsulinemia. We have too much insulin. Can't those three men try to give it glycogen? Can't try to give it to mitochondria? They're already full. So now we've got three bags of sugar going to the liver. We got three bags of sugar getting converted into fat. We now got three blocks of lard, which gets stored in the fat cells. So that's hyperinsulinemia. That is pre-diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happens next? This is the bit that I think people have difficulty understanding. So I'll go through this a bit slower. So mouth has three bags of sugar. The three bags of sugar go to blood. Now, we've now got that process happening for a while. We've now got five insulin molecules ready to receive that insulin. We try to give it to glycogen, doesn't accept it. We try to give it to mitochondria, doesn't need it. We try to give it to the liver, but now the liver is going, nah, I can't take it either because my fat cells are now completely full. I can't take it. Well, I can, but I'm really struggling to do it. And this whole process is getting overwhelmed, and it's sending back this message to say, the insulin, I don't want, we can't accept you, and you keep knocking on the door, but we're going to start saying, nah, this is insulin resistance. So we had hyperinsulinemia. Everything was still in a form of balance. We're now getting into this breakdown of the body's metabolism with insulin resistance. We're now saying no to the insulin. So you can see what happens next. When we say no to the insulin, when blood tries to give the bag of sugar to insulin, insulin's going, nah. So the blood sugar starts to build up in the same way as it did with type 1 diabetes, but for a different reason. And this is insulin resistance. This is 89% of adult Americans, and probably something like 60% of adult New Zealanders. We're now getting this pushback from the liver, and we've got insulin resistance, and now the blood glucose is starting to go up. But my problem is that's when we consider there's a problem. You know, we say when that HbA1c, that measure of blood glucose, starts to go up, that's when we say that's a problem. But the problem started in the 10-year-old eating all that ultra-processed food. Mm. So we need to be dealing with the problem far, far earlier than waiting for the HbA1c to rise, or even worse, waiting for it to get to 50 when we've actually got diabetes. You know, we need to be dealing with this problem far, far sooner. And I think if people become insulin-centric, not blood glucose-centric, we actually will solve this problem, because we'll realize it's happening long, long before the blood glucose starts to rise.
I'm just thinking, as you're talking there, with all that excess sugar in the blood, right? Because that's what ends up, that's the result of what you've just explained. Is there a connection to then cancer? Because as I understand it, you know, cancer cells are hungry for sugar. And I think someone told me when I had my thing, lay off the sugar. Just don't have any. You don't need to. Well, first of all, I couldn't taste it, but you're just possibly feeding the beast. Lay off it.
100%. Yes. You are 100% right. It's actually called the Warburg effect. It was discovered in 1930. The fact that cancer cells are 18 times more greedy for sugar than normal cells. They consume 18 times the amount of sugar. And so if we give them sugar, we are feeding them and encouraging them to grow. It's called the Warburg effect, and it makes 100% sense to not put any sugar into the system if you have cancer.
Yeah. So, hello. There you go. All right. So I think that's all pretty clear. The way you explain it is fantastic, actually. It sets it up perfectly visually. So where do we get to on that diagram?
I'm just thinking then there's actually a second part to this, because the high blood glucose stimulates the high insulin, and insulin is cancer growth factor. Oh. You know, so it's a double whammy. It's the glucose feeds it, and then the insulin promotes the growth of new cancer cells. So it's a double whammy. You know, we do not want to give glucose to people with cancer. The other thing is the PET scan. A PET scan is where you attach radioactive isotopes to glucose molecules, and it lights up the cancer. You know, so the fact that the radioactive isotope goes to the cancer cell and nowhere else is an absolute dramatic demonstration that cancer cells utilize glucose far more than normal cells do.
Yeah, that's a slam dunk, isn't it, really? I remember receiving the results of my PET scan, probably one of the most elated moments of my life, actually. It's it's very meaningful. Okay, well, there's definitely something in that then. All right, like I said, where do we get to on the diagram? I think we got up to no one can accept anything anymore because we're full.
Yeah. Okay, so let's look at the cure. So how do you fix this? And if my description has been clear, it'll be very, very simple how you solve this problem. So if the fat cells and the liver are all pushing back to say, don't, blood glucose, don't give us any more glucose, wouldn't the very, very obvious solution, and I'm sure that all the listeners have already worked this out, is you don't put the raw material in at the start. You know, you don't put the glucose, all the carbohydrates, because all carbohydrates become blood glucose, of course. So when I use the term glucose, it's all carbohydrates. It's our bread, it's our rice, it's our pasta, it's our pastry, it's our potatoes, it's all those starchy carbohydrates. If you don't put them in, you don't have blood glucose, and then the insulin is going to drop, and we are going to go back to normal where we started from in our 9-year-olds. You know, so the cure is you don't put the carbohydrates in at the start. The blood glucose drops, the insulin drops, the liver is now able to accept the glucose again, and there's somewhere for it to put it because we're losing weight. Now, the stage that we've got to do in between is we've got to decompress those fat cells so that they stop pushing back. And what happens when you stop putting the glucose in, your body then goes, where is the energy going to come from? The mitochondria say, where will the energy come from? It comes from the fat stores. So the stored fat is the caveman's refrigerator. It is there for the harsh winters where there's no glucose around and no carbohydrates around. That's how this is supposed to work.
Right.
What we got to do is we've just got to recreate the caveman's harsh winter by not putting that raw material in the first place. The body then takes the energy from the fat stores, and stored fat is the best form of energy for all functions of the body. So we're taking that stored fat out of the stores and we're using it, utilizing it for energy. So that's where we value fasting, ketogenic diets, carnivore diets, low-carb diets, intermittent fasting, all the things we've spoken about many times on the show. That is how you force the body to use stored fat, which is called weight loss. The utilization of stored fat is called losing weight.
Yeah.
And it's no more complicated than that. We have made weight loss this mysterious, complicated, impossible thing. It's not. It's just what used to happen every year to the caveman. You stored the fat at the end of summer. You lost the fat during the winter. It's a normal process. We've just got to recreate the caveman's harsh winter.
Yep.
By not putting the raw material in the first place. And do you know the longest ever recorded fast in human history? Do you know how long that is?
No, blow me away. Come on.
382 days.
Crikey.
382 days, over a year of no food whatsoever, just water and vitamins. So if we've got time, I'll tell you the story. 1972 it was in yep. Scotland. And patient AB, he went into a Scottish emergency department. Dr. Fleming and Dr. McDonald, he said, Dr. Fleming and Dr. McDonald, I'm a fat bastard. And I want you to keep me here in your hospital until I'm skinny. So that's exactly what they did. They kept him in hospital. They monitored him every day. He just had water and vitamins. And at the end of 382 days, he'd lost 125 kilograms.
Wow.
He got down to 82 kgs when he was discharged from hospital after a year of just lying around in a hospital bed and being monitored. There's two amazing parts to the story. One is that, you know, he fasted, just fasted water only fast for that period of time, and he was perfectly okay. Oh, three. The other part was he only did poos every 72 days. That's interesting.
72 days, okay.
Once every 72 days he did poos. The most amazing part of the story, he was actually able to stay in hospital for a year. You can't even stay in hospital now for a day. you can't stay in hospital for more than 4 hours after you've had a baby, you know. So, like, the amazing part was back in 1972, he actually managed to stay in a hospital bed for a year.
Though it would have been, for the doctors I'm picking, would have been a great opportunity to work out some baselines on things. How much, you lost 160, did you say, kilos?
125 kilograms.
125. And he didn't do anything out of the ordinary. That's just bodily systems grinding away on the stored energy. Gee.
Yeah. And so if you sort of average that out, about every 3 days, you use a kilogram or you lose a kilogram of stored fat if you don't eat.
Wow. So, his reveal must have been, the big reveal must have been an occasion.
So that's Mr. AB and Dr. Fleming's and Dr. McDonald, and it's a wonderful story in it. So I'm not suggesting that anyone that's wanting to lose some kilograms necessarily fasts for a dramatically long period of time. There's a little bit to know about that. But a keto diet or a low-carb diet is called a fast-mimicking diet. It's putting in place the biochemical changes needed to induce the fat loss without having to fast. So that's why I'm a very, very strong advocate of the low-carbohydrate and the ketogenic diets.
I'm just thinking, based on what you just told us before, I can't help thinking about this this hospital thing. How long then, maybe it's a bit of a morbid question, but how long, people with normal fat stores, let's say, how long does it take before you're literally starving? How long could you go? You know, let's say you're caught in a disaster or you wake up and you're the only one, you know, still awake.
Yeah.
You know, you've seen movies like that before. The Quiet Earth, I remember that one. Bruno Lawrence, wasn't it? You know, how long have you got? Assuming you've got vitamins and water, you know?
So on with fasting alone, you would anticipate losing a kilogram every 3 days. So if you're 20 kgs overweight, you've got 60 days before you get down to your normal body weight. And then you would start.
That's 2 months.
Yeah, I know. And that's, and a lot of people are 20 kgs overweight.
Yeah.
So you've got a long time.
Yeah.
On keto, when I've looked at an audit of weight loss, people are losing 1.2 kilograms per week on a ketogenic diet. So if you had 20 kgs to lose, what's that, something like 4 months?
Yeah, just over, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, or around. Okay, well, it actually gives you confidence in your body, doesn't it? Because you can actually endure, not, I'm not saying that we're going to have to, but you can actually endure, you know, great gulfs of taking in energy. At the same time, we're living in a world where we take in too much. So it's good to know we've got that headroom in there.
Yeah, and it's basically what the caveman probably did every season. They, you know, if they were able to increase their body weight by 10 kilograms, that probably got them through the harsh winter, the period of food scarcity, you know. And so we're just trying to recreate that period of food scarcity with these modern approaches to weight loss.
Not necessary anymore. All right, though it could be in the future. You never know, do you? All right, so are we at the end?
I just want to emphasize that point I made that all carbohydrates become blood glucose. Yep. So although we talk about sugar, and I certainly don't want anybody to be drinking Coke and eating Tim Tams and lollies.
You always say Tim Tams.
Sorry.
There are others, you know, out there, though that is the very familiar one, isn't
dairy
it?
Dairy milk chocolate. Dairy milk chocolate, okay.
Yeah.
I think it's really important that people realize it's all these carbohydrate rich foods, particularly the ultra processed ones that we're talking about.
Yeah, not just the really obviously sugary stuff.
Yeah, because everyone, particularly people with diabetes, knows that they shouldn't have sugar.
Yeah.
You know, everyone knows that. But what they still get taught is it's okay to have brown rice, it's okay to have lentils, it's okay to have these healthy carbs, and that's the bit of the puzzle that isn't being taught. All these carbohydrates become blood glucose.
Good point. Thank you for making it. Okay, that was really interesting. It's always interesting. Thank you, Dr. Glenn Davies, for coming back on Health Hacks.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me again.
Thank you for tuning in to RCR Reality Check Radio. If you like what you're listening to, dislike what you're listening to, either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057. That's 2057. Or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We would love to hear from you, so connect with us today.